This is Central Time. In 2007, a challenge was issued by the XPRIZE Foundation. Here it is. Build a mass-producible car that could travel 100 miles on the equivalent of a gallon of gas. The reward, $10 million. Hundreds of teams took up the challenge. Many of them were amateurs.
And our next guest has chronicled some of the stories of the teams who vied for the prize, teams that built cars that threw away long-held ideas about what an automobile should be. And he says their story is one of true American ingenuity.
Joining us now is Jason Fagoni. He's the author of Ingenious, a true story of invention, automotive daring, and the race to revive America. Jason, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So first, set the stage for us. What is the Automotive X Prize?
So the Automotive X Prize was a $10 million competition to create the super-efficient car of the future. And it was launched in 2007 by a nonprofit foundation in California that was just frustrated with the status quo in the automotive industry. We've had very little progress on fuel efficiency in about 100 years. The Model T, Ford Model T, got about 20 miles to the gallon, and the average vehicle today gets about 25. So there's been very little progress, and this foundation said, we can do better. This is insane. This is a very creative country. There are a lot of ingenious people here. And so they put out a call. They said, if you can make a 100-mile-per-gallon car that gets 200 miles of range, we will give you $10 million. And it didn't matter who you were or what you'd done before or how much money you had in your pocket. If you solved the problem, you got the money. And hundreds of teams from all over the world responded to this challenge, and they were not big companies for the most part. They were small teams, entrepreneurs, startups, students, and they all came in with better ideas.
Well, here's some of their stories in a minute, but first I wanted to ask about your story. In the intro to your book, you say you're not a car guy, so why does this car contest spark your interest?
Yeah, I'm not at all. For most of the time I was reporting this book, I was driving a 2002 Honda Accord with about 120,000 miles on it. And, you know, I think I'm like most people in that when I get in my car, I don't want to think about it too much. I basically want to turn the key and have it work. I don't have a lot of patience for crazy engineering or radical design. I just expect it to work. But, you know, the contest captivated me because I found out about it in 2010. And in 2010, you know, it was a pretty dark time in America. The big banks had all failed. General Motors and Chrysler had gone bankrupt. And it just seemed like all of the kind of the big guys in America had let us down. The elites had failed. And the idea of the contest was that we needed to broaden our idea of what an inventor is and look for solutions in other places. So all of these little guys with big ideas were entering and said they could do better, and I wanted to see if they could. I wanted to see if these little guys with big ideas could solve a problem that Detroit had refused to solve.
So give us a sense of the kinds of people who turned out to enter cars in this contest.
Sure. One of my favorite teams was Illuminati Motor Works, which was basically a 39-year-old dude from Central Illinois who decided to build an electric car with his friends and his wife and his father. He was a state employee. He worked for the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, and he hated his job, so he spent most of his time at work sort of daydreaming about projects that he could work on in the barn behind his house. And he heard about this contest, and he thought that he could win it by building an electric car by hand. So he set out to literally build an electric car with his bare hands. He went to a scrapyard near his house, bought a bunch of lengths of steel, forged them in a wood-burning stove in the barn behind his house, melted the steel around plywood forms, and then welded these lengths of steel together to form the skeleton of this car. You know how if you see in automobile commercials these robots that weld cars together? This car was essentially welded together by hand by one guy. And in the skeleton of the car, he put parts that he had scavenged from junkyards. And around the parts that he had scavenged from junkyards, he built a custom super aerodynamic body for the car, also by hand, out of foam, epoxy, and fiberglass. And he did all of that because he had to build it from scratch because there wasn't an existing car that he could adapt that was aerodynamic and efficient enough to get to 100 miles per gallon. He had to start start with a blank sheet of paper. And when I first saw this car, I admit I did not want to sit in it. I did not want to drive it. I did not believe in it. It looked like kind of like a dead fingernail because of the color of the epoxy. But, I underestimated them. They ended up performing incredibly well in the competition. I only chose to follow them because I thought they were an interesting kind of human interest story. A husband and wife building an electric car in a barn. But they surprised everybody, including me.
Well, you reference Mark Twain in your book and his idea of a nation of inventors. And man, this guy is like Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, kind of. He really epitomized that Mark Twain inventor ideal that you mentioned.
Yeah, I love that comparison. That's great. I think we've gotten away from the original idea of the inventor in this culture. I think when you think of an inventor who has influence in the culture today, you probably think of, a coder in Silicon Valley, maybe. Or maybe you think of Elon Musk of SpaceX and Tesla Motors, who is a very brilliant and creative guy. But he also made a fortune in the dot-com era. Inventors today who have influence in the culture are rich elites. And it didn't used to be this way. Mark Twain said, "We are called the nation of inventors, and we are." And Walt Whitman wrote beautiful poetry about engineers and mechanics. And Thomas Jefferson designed the patent system so that ordinary people would be able to protect their ideas. And I think what excited all these guys about invention was the democracy of it, the idea that we all have these innate Promethean powers, and we can use them to create, and we can design a country to unleash them. And I think we've gotten away from that idea over the years, but I don't think it's too late to go back to it. And I think the XPRIZE and competitions like this are proof, because it really was an eruption of incredible creative energy and flourishing in a very dark time, and it came from nowhere. So I think if we broaden our idea of what an inventor is and where important ideas are allowed to come from, we can really tap much broader potential in this country.
We're talking to Jason Fagoni. His new book is Ingenious, and he looked at the Automotive XPRIZE, stories of people trying to build the cars of the future. We'll hear some more of their stories coming up in a few minutes.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation now with Jason Fagoni about the Automotive XPRIZE. He writes about it in his new book, Ingenious. It's the quest to build the car of the future and, he says, rekindle the spirit of invention and inventors in the United States. Jason, another team that I wanted to talk about, you followed them, the West Philly Hybrid X team. Tell us about who was involved in that.
Sure. West Philadelphia Hybrid X team. I work in Philadelphia, and in early 2010, I heard about some students and teachers who make super efficient hybrid cars at a high school in a poor section of West Philly. And I thought that was interesting, so I went over to see them. And when I walked into their garage, it was this old-fashioned place, all the machines and signs right out of the 50s. But then the kids were building these wild futuristic hybrids. And a lot of these kids are not high achieving on standardized tests, but if you give them a manual and a transmission and a free Saturday, they can take apart a transmission in no time flat. And they had actually beaten MIT in a number of similar fuel efficiency competitions, and they had beaten MIT already in the XPRIZE. So I wanted to follow them because, number one, I was interested in their cars. Their cars were adaptations. They weren't built from scratch. They were designed to be low-cost vehicles, the kinds of vehicles that the kids could see their moms driving. One of them was a sort of like a Chevy Volt on the cheap. It was an adaptation of a Ford Focus, a 2008 Ford Focus. They had taken out the engine, and they had put in a hybrid drive of their own design. It was very ingenious. It was a the gasoline component was a Harley Davidson V-twin motorcycle engine that was married to an electric motor, and that's never been done before in a hybrid. A Harley has never been in a hybrid, much less in a hybrid based on a Ford Focus. It was like the loudest hybrid ever made in the world. It growled, it growled like a Harley. Both of the systems were connected to the transmission by means of a magnetic clutch that was salvaged from a farm tractor. And the first time I saw this thing, it was up on benches. It looked like a piece of outsider art or something. But it was very efficient, and it worked really well. And the kids did incredibly well in the competition. They made it to the semifinals, and they ended up beating a team from Cornell.
What kind of mileage are we talking here in a car made by students struggling in high school? What kind of mileage did they come up with?
They came up with, I think, 63.5 miles per gallon equivalents on their hybrid, which is pretty good. It's better than a Prius. And, you know, their car was necessarily kind of heavy because they didn't have the money to do extreme lightweighting that some of the other teams had done. So, you know, 63.5 miles per gallon with a 3,000-pound Ford Focus is excellent. And they would have gotten much more, only they had made a small mistake with a minor part of their system that they had overlooked at the last minute because they ran out of time. But it's still a pretty incredible achievement.
Now, they lost the event, and this was a few years ago, but you've kept following the teams you focused on. What is this high school team, this high school car design team, what have they done since?
Sure. So they went to an event called the Green Grand Prix in New York the year following the XPRIZE, 2011. They raced against a Chevy Volt and a number of other efficient cars, and they won it flat. Came in first place. I believe they got 120 miles per gallon equivalent with one of their cars. They went back to the Green Grand Prix in 2012, and they won it again. So, you know, they're a monster. They're a hugely competitive team, and the XPRIZE, if anything, the fact that they didn't win it is an anomaly in their history. But a number of other teams have continued to work on their cars after the prize, and that's one of the reasons why I kept following them for 4 years. I didn't just follow them during the prize in 2010. I stuck with it because I wanted to see what their cars would be able to do. There was a team called the Edison 2 out of Lynchburg, Virginia. They were run by a fiery, passionate German named Oliver Kuttner. And Oliver Kuttner's story was that he, as a kid, he had always wanted to be a professional race car driver, but he eventually he got too fat to be able to fit into the slim cockpits of the race cars. So he became obsessed with the opposite idea, the idea of lightness. He believed in this dictum of Henry Ford. Henry Ford once said, "The most beautiful things in life are those from which all excess weight has been eliminated." And Oliver believed that with religious devotion. He believed that cars had become too heavy, too bloated, that the fact that we're all driving around these 3,000-pound vehicles is a catastrophe. And he set about to make a very light car. In fact, he called it that, the very light car. And it was so light, ultimately, that you could push it across the floor with your thumb.
Wow.
The very light car was so light and so efficient that it was able to get 102.5 miles per gallon equivalent in the XPRIZE while using a small internal combustion engine. It was burning ethanol and gasoline.
And you write and that he got that weight by rethinking every part, right, even down to the lug nuts of this car to try to strip away weight.
Exactly. I mean, the first time I met him, he asked me to hold out my hand, and he put a small piece of metal in my hand, and he started grinning. I looked down, I was holding a lug nut, which is, as you know, is the most humble part of a car. It holds the wheel onto a car. I didn't understand why he was grinning so maniacally about this lug nut. He was so proud of it. And I came to understand that he was so proud of it because the lug nut weighed from 3 to 10 times at less than a normal lug nut. He had made a custom lug nut. He had gone to the trouble of making a custom lug nut just to save a couple of ounces across the weight of the car. And what he wanted me to understand was that he is such a maniac about lightness that he would go to that length just to save a couple of ounces. And of course, he had not just reinvented the lug nut, but he had reinvented every other part of the car.
So the goal of this prize was to come up with something that could be marketed, maybe picked up by the existing car companies. By those terms, has the Automotive X Prize been successful?
Well, I think it depends on what you mean by practical. I think that there was a sort of a tension built into the prize. The tension was between creativity and practicality. So the cars, according to the rules of the prize, the cars had to be safe and practical. They had to accelerate in a certain way. They had to do a double lane change maneuver. They had to brake within a certain distance. They had to be like normal cars. but they didn't have to be crash tested like normal cars, and they didn't have to conform to all of the safety standards of normal cars. And the reason for that was that the XPRIZE wanted to create some room for creativity. They wanted to create somewhat of an artificial world where the usual rules didn't apply. And they wanted to do that because the normal rules have created this catastrophe of almost no progress on fuel efficiency in a century. So they wanted to try to break out of that. So I think the result was that a lot of the cars ended up looking a little weird because they had to look weird to achieve these efficiencies. And I think a lot of people looked at these weird-looking cars and said, well, these cars aren't practical. I guess I would say that weird is in the eye of the beholder. You know, weird cars have succeeded before. The Volkswagen Beetle, the original Beetle, was a very weird-looking car. But it was well-made and fun and efficient, and it met a need. And eventually the Beetle became a design icon. So, you know, weird also changes as the world changes, I think. You know, it's increasingly weird to me that we go to a gas station with a 3,000-pound vehicle and put flammable liquid into it, you know, by the gallon. It's weird to know that, you know, every gallon you burn, you're putting 20 pounds of carbon dioxide into an atmosphere that is increasingly saturated with it. You're literally warming the planet by a tiny increment every time you drive.
All right, Jason, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us to tell these stories today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's Jason Fogoni. He's the author of Ingenious, a true story of invention, automotive daring, and the race to revive America.